Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Four Center podcast feed, and this particular episode is the Bad Batch Report.
Boom, boom, intrigue and development.
There you go, kids. That is Ken's electronica. just some drums and the word intrigue being shouted. You can dance to that if you sped it up.
Intrigue. Exactly.
There's a lot of intrigue we're going to be discussing. I'm Joseph Scrimshaw. The person making mouth music is Ken Nabsock, and we are going to discuss episode 14, season 2 of The Bad Batch. This one is entitled Tipping Point, written by head writer Jennifer Corbett and story editor Matt Machenowicz, directed by Saul Ruiz. Hey, Matt Machenowicz, still credited as story editor. We can tell we are getting toward the big finale. This episode aired by itself, and then the final two episodes, episode 15 and 16, are airing together on the same night. One big finale at the same time as The Mandalorian. So we're really heading into end game here. You and I think have probably had our weirdest viewing experience here. We have said this entire season we're extremely lucky to have screeners. We are lucky to have screeners, and in particular for us, we really want to give Bad Batch its full due. So it's been great to have the screeners, so we can watch these episodes ahead. We can record the episodes ahead, and then come Wednesday when we're doing Mandalorian, it's all Mando all day. But we still covered The Bad Batch. Mm-hmm. But as we mentioned last week, our screeners timed out on Sunday, March 12th. So I watched this. I watched it twice. I gave it my full attention. But there was also some intrigue in that I had to really race. I think I finished my notes on this episode at 8:59. Is it timed out at 9 a.m.? So I admit that is, I want to be honest, that's part of my viewing experience was, man, I'm loving this show. I'm loving Mando, but it's a lot at once when we want to cover it as deeply as we want to.
Yeah, I think we're both in the same spot. I think we just try to be honest and set the table. And a lot of times it's sharing the fun of the midnight experience. I was a lot going on this episode. There might be a detail to or miss. I got to be honest with you all here. But the other thing, too, you know, there's never in the time where I'm like, too much Star Wars and stop. But Bad Batch, I'm just such a champion for the show, but particularly this season. It's just been so great. It's moved me. It's affected me. And I really want Bad Batch to get its due. So sometimes it's that's what disappoints me more than too much Star Wars or screeners timed out. All those things you and I are being honest about. It's just at the end of the day, it's like, oh, this is a great show. I just want to talk about it more.
Yeah. And I am glad that it exists, you know, on Disney Plus, that it isn't just sort of a broadcast. And if you want to buy the DVDs, I'm glad that we live in this different era so that even if people are missing it, maybe not giving their entire attention, that it can be discovered, because the whole show has been great. But I think season two has been particularly phenomenal. So I was really excited to be able to watch this. I did. My first viewing was Saturday morning. I was like, I got one more chance to have a Saturday morning cartoon. Yeah. And I had a fist pumping and nail biting breakfast. That was my experience. Parts of this episode, like, all right. And parts of this episode were like, oh, no.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
So what was your overall reaction? You love this episode, like it, struggle with it. Any other ways you experienced it emotionally? Where'd you go?
No, I really loved it a lot. This is an episode that starts putting some pieces on the board. You hear that in episodes ones and twos of seasons. The pieces are on the board, but this is the board's been out for a bit. And this episode really did a good job of saying, hey, we got this stuff we're dealing with. We're moving forward. And we got this big, giant decision that Crosshair has made. And we're going to talk about that. But I've just loved how they've handled that. I keep saying this entire season could have been Crosshair nipping at the heels of the Bad Batch. It wasn't. It was different. And I like how it's all kind of coming to a head.
Yeah, and I really did like from the Bad Batch's perspective too. What one of the things that gives this episode power is like they made their pitch to Crosshair, you know, a couple different times, but really on Kamino. It's like, look, the Empire doesn't care about you. They're just leaving you here while they blow up the planet. You're really not going to come with us? Yeah. Okay. So I really like that the Bad Batch has been so separated from Crosshair, and it's allowed him to have these amazing solo episodes, and now it's all coming together. In this episode, which I did, I really, really enjoyed it. It felt like a narratively necessary episode, which isn't bad. It's just that I think functionally they needed to put all the pieces in place to head into the big two episode finale. Mm. So it couldn't be as dialed in, as specific, as much of a tone poem as some of the greats of this season. To me, the Solitary Clone, the Crossing, the Entombed, the Outpost, even last week's episode, Pabu, I think they really benefited from being this, like, we are really laser focused on this experience, this mood. This one had to widen out a little bit to set everything up.
No, I like that. I like that description of it there. That makes sense. I think some of the Crosshair stuff in this episode is earned by the stuff that's come before, right? The time that we got to take before.
Yeah, that really made us feel what all the other characters were feeling, and including Echo. One of the things I liked about this episode is it made all of season two come into full focus in a lot of ways for me. I had talked a couple episodes before about realizing how much I was just so purely, deeply rooting for the clones, and having that realization that there's been this path that attacked the clones. We didn't know them yet, and they were kind of a symbol of the failure to stop the war. Then the Clone Wars animated series, we get to know them, and we love them, and we do root for them, but we're also like, too bad you're pawns and you don't know. And then the Bad Batch show is they know the deal, and now we get to just absolutely root for them. This episode, I really felt that again as we were checking in on different clones with different missions, different perspectives, and they're all coming together and kind of rooting for all of them. But the other thing it made me really think is about the Bad Batch show itself, where season one is definitely about the clones. It's definitely about the Bad Batch, but you and I often described it in our discussions as we're getting to know the Bad Batch, but the Bad Batch is also taking us, the audience, on a tour of the horrors of the Empire.
Mm-hmm.
And now season two, if season one was, oh, well, this is our new reality, how we're going to function in it, the Empire's real bad. Season two, by this episode, has, to me, come to the head of, this is the clones versus the Empire.
Mm.
Now we fully know that you threw us out. Now we fully know and acknowledge in that mid-season episode with Palpatine of like, he's always a step ahead of us. He's always using us. He's going to keep being a step ahead of us. We got a real big challenge here. And you know what? It's us against the Empire. You know, and especially that now with them being drummed out of service and vilified by Palpatine, there's this kind of thrill that finally the clones are, you know, not being used by the Empire. They're not trying to cling to the Empire. They're turning around and just two big clone middle fingers up. It's us versus the Empire, you know?
Fight for the brothers and sisters. Yeah. Yeah. I love that. Love that.
Yeah. So I'm interested to see how that plays out in the finale. I also just really appreciated, even though that this episode didn't feel necessarily as specific of a dialed in tone poem, that it also did demonstrate just the great clockwork construction of the whole show, but this season, how well built it is. When you look at the number of elements and ideas and plot lines that have been seeded that had started coming together in this episode, things as small as, you know, in the first episodes, Tech was training Omega. We're back to Tech training Omega. We're dealing with the possibility of Crosshair finally siding with the Bad Batch. What is the true nature of Rex and Echo's mission? What are they about right now? We're checking back in with the rescued clone Gregor and Hauser, who you know, stood strong against the Empire in the Hera episodes. The big picture question of the Bad Batch, are they more than soldiers, gets discussed not just metaphorically, but literally. All these ideas from big to small are coming together in this episode, which really impressed me.
Yeah, that ain't hard. That ain't easy to do. It's hard. And to have this great writing team, we shout out Matt Machenovich every week as the story editor. It's been done so wonderfully. That's why I love this season. I love the first season, but this one, it's hitting all the notes for me.
Yeah, and building themes that they're returning to musically. We talked about a little bit in our previous episode, about episode 13, Pabu, that just the existence of Pabu, the existence of somewhere where the Bad Batch could be a part of a community, made both of us a little concerned about there not being a season three, that this is endgame. Also, we should really note, we're recording this more than a week ahead of the release of this episode. So there might be announcements and you might be able to laugh at us fools from the past. If there's more knowledge by the time this is released, did this episode with all of these threads coming together, make you continue to feel like there's a possibility that we're heading toward putting a bow on this part of the Bad Batch's story and that there won't be a season three?
Yeah. 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 It's kind of a roll call of things not yet coming to an end in terms of story, but Crosshair's making a big decision. Again, we haven't spent a ton of time with him, and so it might feel like you're not, that it was rushed in a way. And I don't think that. I'm just saying, I've seen other times in other properties and other shows where like, oh, well, this, what's Crosshair going to do, hangs over you for a long time. And then you're like, oh, he does this. He sends a message. Oh, well, that got solved. Okay. But his story's not over here. But that's one of the things where it's like, we didn't waste any time with it. I like that. I don't know if that's for everybody. We're heading towards this summit. There's this thing of that. There's the conversations about the Empire. A Hunter doesn't think the Empire can be defeated. And Echo's answers about that, I think, are key. That we, looking back, we said it last week, but this isn't a gathering of all stars. Gunji's not here. Cody's not here. We have two episodes. They could all show up. But it's not necessarily like that. And that might have not been the purpose. Gunji's off doing what he's doing now. Cody, we don't know yet. There could be more. You know, young Luthen Rail isn't showing up here. And all that would be fine. But this show was asking different questions. Is a distinct possibility than all of us maybe thought two seasons ago at the beginning.
Yeah. And like I said, maybe it's already been announced and we all know by the time this episode drops and there is a Bad Batch panel at Celebration. And boy, do I hope that's an announcement of season three, because I can definitely see the story continuing. Right. Mm-hmm. But it is also making sense to me that this is a show about the clones discovering the full truth of what the Clone Wars was, what the Republic was under Palpatine, what it's become, and them getting to truly have absolutely full agency of deciding who they want to be and what they believe in and what is right for clones. I think that's part of what I was responding to, of it feeling, yeah, they're heading to a summit. That's, you know, definitely big end game stuff. The crosshair question feels like it is being answered in terms of at least his eyes finally opening up to the Empire. Still plenty of questions of exactly what his fate is going to be. But it's starting to feel like, yep, this is a show about the clones stepping into their full agency. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we can end it with the Bad Batch staring off into the horizon and leave the possibility for other stories open down the line.
Yeah. And I know the big one hanging is Omega, right? Omega's place in it, relations to Boba Fett, Jango Fett, Lamassu and all this. And we still, at the time of this recording, have two more big giant episodes to get to. Mm-hmm. I'm not suggesting this isn't an insider tip, nothing. I see, especially the Pabu episode and combined with some of the things said in this episode, I see that there's an emotional ending that's possibly exists that might leave some of your answers unanswered, unfortunately.
Yeah, no, totally agreed. Totally agreed. We're coming back to Nala Se. We're coming back to Kamino in this finale, I would imagine. Not Kamino, but the idea of Kamino. Yeah. So with that in mind, that the horrible possibility of Endgame, what was the big theme of this episode to you? What ideas were at stake in this episode?
I went to one really big idea here. I wrote down this idea of, is that all you are? But I put it down. You got a lot of talk about Bad Batch and their roots. You got Rex and Echo kind of redefining what they're doing out here in the galaxy and the purpose of it there. But Crosshair, time and time again, being faced with this truth that, you know, your Imperial property, and the clones are called that property. And what are you? And he was always a good soldier, and he sees it. And all these things that have, you know, you said the eyes open, so to speak. He wakes up, and then just this, there's knowing what you are. There's being happy with what you are. And then maybe asking, is this all you are? And I think that some of the stuff going here. And sometimes the answer is yes, or sometimes the answer is, yeah, no, this is where I am right now. This is who I am right now. I think some of that's going on with the Bad Batch. But I think in terms of Crosshair, there isn't this tearful, like, what have I done type of vibe with me in this episode. It's just like, you know, he knows the connections. The connections are strong. And is this all I am? Just a good soldier that, you know, lets his friends get killed, lets them get hunted down? No, that's not all I, who I am. And he takes a step forward in that.
I agree with you. And I'm excited to discuss, you know, even more about Crosshair's decision. But I think a part of Crosshair's decision in his eyes being open are, that the truth, he can't look away from the truth of the Empire, right? Mm-hmm, yeah. And when Hemlock, the least trustworthy person imaginable, if somebody with one black glove whispers that I can have my freedom, mm-hmm. I'm not believing him. Joking a little bit about some of these sort of pulp signifiers of who his character is. But I think from Crosshair's perspective, the experience of the solitary clone, the experience of the episode, the outpost, yeah. He finally gets it that there's no amount of being a good soldier mm-hmm. where the Empire is going to treat him with respect. So I think he's looking at Hemlock and being like, you're not going to give me my freedom. You know, you can't BS me anymore. I'm not buying it. I know what the Empire is now, and I'm not kidding myself anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is not all that I am.
Yep. I really agree with that. I think that's a really great way to phrase it. I could not think of a better way to phrase it. So I wrote down clones matter, and I really don't mean that as like a mm-hmm. cheap joke. I really mean it as an essential statement of our lives have value.
Yeah.
And I think that is, that's to me what tied all of the elements of this story together. There's definitely like plot machinery of getting everybody pointed in the same direction for the big climax and the what's going to happen at the summit that we hear about from Tarkin. But each story seemed to me to reflect a really strong belief that, yeah, of course we have value and we're going to fight for it. The clone story has always been a push and pull between their inherent value as sentient beings and pawns of Palpatine, right? We meet them and attack the clones as they are pawns that Palpatine has successfully put in place to make war in inevitability. Then we get the counterpoint in the first broadcast episode of the Clone Wars ambush, where Yoda really takes time to tell them that you are unique beings in the Force. You have inherent value. Tons of storytelling in the Clone Wars emanates from that truth, right? The audience's bond with the clones emanates from that truth. And it gets challenged in this episode, as you're saying, of Crosshair saying, you know, really confidently and maybe even with some pride in his former squad mates about Omega, they'll never turn her over.
Mm-hmm.
And Hemlock saying, they don't have a choice. She is a clone and therefore Imperial property, as you highlighted. So there's the Imperial perspective of, no, your property to be shuffled around, used, thrown away, experimented on, you know, whatever we want. You're our property. And then every one of those, the main three threads are about our hero characters, and I would include Crosshair in that at this point, as statements of value and, like you, raising their question of their ultimate fate. Where are we going to end up? You know, what are we going to be? I think getting to see Rex and Echo's mission in full bloom of,
yeah,
it is not a rebellion. This isn't the story of how they hooked up with Luthen and Saw. Maybe it will be down the line.
Could be.
But right now, it's zeroed in on the Empire is too big, too everywhere. The galaxy is too shattered. The Jedi are gone. Not even all our brothers are on board yet with what's happening to them. Mm-hmm. It's zeroed in just on clones matter, rescuing clones, right?
Yeah.
I think you and I are both really affected by this brief exchange between Hunter and Echo, where Echo seems very like militant. He's going to keep out there fighting. And Hunter says, you know, hey, you've seen how powerful they are. You can't defeat them. And Echo lays it out very clearly. It's not about that. It's about fighting for our brothers, right?
Yeah.
Great tie into Echo's life experience where, you know, he was left behind and people cared about him and rescued him. So he's not going to leave anybody behind. That's beautiful. That's great. But it's this real theme statement, kind of Echo looking at the television and going, this show isn't about us joining the rebellion. It's about the clones doing right by the clones. So it's about the whole show, but it's also about this episode that, to me, it really lays out. That's what we're talking about this episode. We're not talking about liberating Kashyyyk, sadly. We're talking about our brothers.
Yeah, and I think in especially the way you and I talk about Star Wars, and it can easily be applied to the real world, and that's what we do, and we're always going to do that. But there also going to be a danger in that. Don't take it always one for one. I think this there isn't this shrug, there's nothing you can do vibe. It's everything you're saying. There's a matter of, that's what we talked about the Pabu episode last week. A wave will find you, and sometimes it's the value is saving those around you and preserving the community there. This is a check in on your friends type of episode for me. And always the big picture is mine. And all that to say, look where, I guess spoilers for no one who's watched Rebels, for people who've watched Rebels, but you know, look where Rex and Gregor go, right?
Mm-hmm.
They don't meet them as a cell there. Rex has to be brought back into the fold, right? They're off. I'll even say kind of hiding. So there's a lot of years between these two stories, a lot of adventures to have. I keep joking, maybe there's a Rex and Echo spinoff adventure series, and maybe they do find it. But this episode, one of the big themes also for me was groups needing to connect together. And connection is something we always talk about. We've talked about with Bad Batch, talked about with Pabu, but also that highlights to me, there's a feeling Hunter's maybe expressing that, hey, there's too much, we're alone. So there's a need to connect, an importance behind the idea of connecting, and all these selves later on might learn that lesson. But right now we're not there in the story.
Yeah, no, I really agree with you. I think there is a sense of connection And yeah, I don't, like I said last episode, I think Star Wars often plays the beat of the hero's journey moment of the hero resisting the call. You know, Luke Skywalker saying it's all so far away from here. Rey being convinced that she can't really leave Jakku. Lots of beats like that throughout stories. Han Solo trying to run away from the fight. All those things. That's not what's happening here. This feels to me like the fight is too big to just launch into. It's suicide to just like take 15 clones and the network we've built up, and you know we're gonna go take Coruscant. Like, we're not. It's not gonna happen, and it's not gonna happen right now. So we are choosing to control what we can control. We're choosing to fight what we can fight for now. And for me, it's something that's important to me, is that finding that balance between your immediate needs in helping others. I think that you shouldn't be selfish, but you also need to, you know, be there for yourself and be there for your immediate community so you can be strong enough to help others. There's that thin line to me between like saying like, I can never help anybody else because I'm working on myself.
Right.
But I also just kind of feel like in the big picture, what's happening here is they're saying our brothers are in immediate trouble. We'll rescue them and then we'll see what's next.
Yes. 100%.
Yeah. 100%. I think these ideas that we're talking about of the value of clones, the question of their fate, the question of their inherent, you know, value, what are they going to be that you're talking about, I think is also highlighted in, you know, what's going on with Hauser, right? We saw him stand up to the Empire, and his prison experience seems, like all the Imperial prison experiences, not great. He's got that one line where he says, I don't know how long we were in that prison. I went in with 8 of my men. Only 3 survived. You know, we can talk some canon. We can talk some Narkina 5 there later on. But for me, like the big picture is like they are being treated horribly, right? Yeah. I think having Senator Chuchi there and picking up that thread from the middle of the season.
Love that.
That, you know, Chuchi was the one who's like, yeah, Omega pointing out that why don't the clones have representation? I'm going to fight for them, you know, to have a full retirement package. You and I talked about there's the ambiguity of, hey, did that all go away when Palpatine kind of blamed them for the destruction of Kamino? So we don't know exactly what's going on with that, but we do know that Chuchi is still there. Pantorn guards in the background. Hunkered down with Rex and Echo, trying to make a difference, trying to say, you're humans, you're veterans, you should not be detained in Imperial mystery prisons. Yeah. You know, the amount of caring and valuing of clones is so apparent for Senator Chuchi.
Yeah, now the great connection, again, putting all the pieces on the board, I guess you could say, but answering the question of they're still fighting for me.
Yeah. Yeah, so there's the perspective from the Rex and Echo thread, and then there's the thread of the Bad Batch, where, you know, you can look at the Bad Batch in this episode and go, well, they're just having a great time.
Yeah.
But there's that question of, there's explicitly ideas about the Bad Batch's value in this episode. You know, it isn't just we check in on them and there's some fun comedy beats. Everything is about this idea of they have value, and it is, you're phrasing it, you know, who or what do they want to be? We're watching, you know, them help rebuild Lower Pabu. Shep, there's some fun comedy with Wrecker, and Shep explicitly says to Hunter, he's become an integral part of this community. You all have, right?
Yeah.
It supports this idea that they have value as soldiers, but they have value in lots of ways, and that they deserve to be a part of a community. They deserve a peaceful existence. Hunter makes it even more explicit when Shep asks him if they'd consider staying long term, and he says, you know, for soldiers, putting down roots is an occupational hazard, and Shep just says it right out there in the sunlight. Is that all you are, soldiers? How did you feel about those examples of Bad Batch's value being reflected in their experiences on Pabu?
It might be a real personal take on it. That was kind of the exchange that drove my entire mindset on the theme of this episode of Shep's not saying, well, what you were was bad. What you were was something you could even help. finding yourself in that, your own, the search for identity is something that's big in Star Wars. But now is a period of change. Now there's perhaps a new normal in front of you. And do you want to stop there? Do you want to stop there or find your place in the next chapter of the story? They're not just passing through. They might have thought, we'll stick around and build here for a little bit. But look what's happened in the time that we were apart between these episodes, however long it was. You know, Wrecker's, you know, laughing as he fishes, and they're using everything they need, and they're not just staying at an Airbnb in my head. And that's a big change, being such a key thing in Star Wars, and the choices that change might bring to you, and do you want to stop there? Is that all you are? Isn't necessarily a soldier in this case. Soldier's bad, or you know. Who you are as a person. Like, yes, you know who you are there. Is that where you want to stop is big with me. And Shep really kind of summed it all up with a challenging question, which is okay.
Yeah. 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 And I think one of the other meaningful lines to me in this is Hunter saying, you know, to be honest, it might be the best thing for us.
Yeah.
About staying there when he's talking with Echo, asks Hunter about, are you guys staying here indefinitely? And it's a great delivery because there's just like a lot of emotion in it. And I just really feel everything that Hunter has been through, right? He's like, well, we have these skills. I guess we should use them to survive. But I don't want to, you know, break my own moral code and go in with Sid. I keep having to break my moral code. And yeah, we could be out there fighting. But if we are, is that then Omega's entire life, right? And it goes back to Hunter looking with the Wookiee elder at you know, Omega and Gungi bending down at the tree and being like, they should just be kids, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you almost get this sense of a little bit of push and pull between Hunter's like, well, maybe if I was just a loner, I'd be, you know, you know, you have my knife, Echo. Let's go fight, right? So, but it's part of a squad.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the sort of dad, the ultimate dad of dads within the squad of like, this is what's good. This is what we need. We haven't found any place better. We can use our abilities. We can be part of a community. Omega can be a child.
So I love this. This is somewhere I don't have this in my notes right now. You made me think of this too, of like, even this is a personal thing for me of like all through the season, I've expressed like, is Hunter there yet? Is he grabbing his blaster and saying, it's time to kick the Empire's ass. Let's go. I've been waiting for that. Right. There's a couple, mm-hmm. almost a point of frustration. Here we go again. And Echo leaves, and Echo. And I know we didn't spend a ton of time with Echo in the Bad Batch, especially season one. I know that's something you and I said, I know that was something that was on your heart of, hey, maybe a little more Echo time. And again, I'm joking. Maybe we get an Echo Rex spinoff. I don't know. But I love that if you kind of follow the story and everything you kind of explain, now it makes some sort of sense that that wasn't right for them as a team, them as a situation. And all those moments of him trying to figure out the best way to give Omega the life she deserves. There's some training. There's, I'm going to protect you. Maybe he's overprotective. We've gone through all that she becomes part of the team. She finally gets a helmet, all those kind of things that we've been following along the way. And for him to come to the realization that life has sent us this way, and this is where we need to be now, because this is how we can help. And we're not shutting ourselves off. We've said last week they could leave Pabu, go do something else, and then have Echo kind of come back. And it isn't like Echo's like, I got some people to join the fight. It's like, I got some people who can help right now. And I think that all tracks for me as an interesting development that I wasn't expecting, and maybe not even wanting, because I wanted the let's go kick the Empire's ass. There's never more than 12. I wanted that vibe. And Hunter's not going to deliver that vibe because he's not there right now. Maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. And maybe he will someday. And maybe, you know, this would be a tale where, you know, they're clearly going to keep teaching Omega. And that has been central in these last couple episodes, right? Of like, of Fee saying like, she is getting really skilled. She's a great soldier. You've made her a great soldier. You're still training her. I don't think Hunter's ever going to stop training her. Right. Once she's got piloting down, it's going to be time to learn tracking, you know? So it could be also like Omega gets to be, you know, 16 and says, I want to go out there. And Hunter's like, okay, then we will, you know?
Yeah.
You're an adult now and it's your choice. I know I can't keep you safe forever, but, you are my priority. You are what needs defending.
Yeah. 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 And a lot of this I'm saying is just, it's like, I wonder where we're going. I wonder where we could go. And I wasn't expecting to be at this point. right? Where the show was again, and it's so, and so when you and I discuss Real World, this isn't a, you know, just stay on your island and don't get involved. That's not what's at play here.
No, but there is also, no, I really agree with that. I think that sometimes it is about, it starts small. It starts, you know, you can't, I'm trying to think of the way I want to say this. I have lived in neighborhoods that need people to stay there to survive.
Yes.
And if everybody just runs off to have their big adventure rather than being there for the people in the community immediately around you, there is value in that too, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I feel bad that I kept calling her the Wookiee Elder. So I looked it up. It's Yana. Yana. I didn't have her name. Yana is the Wookiee Elder. Yeah. I think the other interesting thing with the Bad Batch that our main squad there, Wrecker, Omega, Tech, are left in this really interesting question mark. We get the feeling, I think, as an audience of like, of course they're going to go get involved because, you know, that's the movement of storytelling. But the way they're conflicted about Crosshair, the way that they learn, like, he's in the Imperial prison and we're pretty sure he was trying to warn us, but he could also, it could also be a trap. Kind of really set up this, like, what will they risk to bring Crosshair home, right? I think that, to me, was a part of the point of, of, okay, Pabu works. And, hey, if Echo needs help, that's a no-brainer. We'll go help. We'll go help Echo.
Mm-hmm.
Do we risk everything we have here to help Crosshair, you know? That's a just a classic Star Wars, like, we want him back. We want him to be seeing the light. Can we trust it?
Mm-hmm. The last shot of the season, maybe series, is Crosshair on the beach, and just Hunter goes, "You can stay if you want."
that would be pretty amazing. Nice peaceful shot of Crosshair like bullseyeing fish from the tower.
Toothpick in his mouth. Okay.
How big of a fish do you want?
Yeah.
Let's talk about Crosshair. So, you know, there's the Rex and Echo thread. There's the core Bad Batch thread. And then there's the Crosshair thread, which is, you know, a lot of the actual, you know, time of the episode.
Mm-hmm.
I really thought this was an episode where we talked a ton in the outpost about him finally realizing the Empire's never going to value me. I'm clinging to something that hates me. I'm clinging to something that wants me dead.
Mm-hmm.
And finally has that, like, I have value. I have just the fact that I'm alive and I exist. It means I have value. Then I think this was a next step in him caring about all clones, right? I mean,
yeah,
certainly that epiphany was coming out of his relationship with Mayday. So there's a valuing of a fellow soldier, of a fellow sentient being in Mayday. But I thought it was really interesting that when he gets taken out of his individual cell, Crosshair seems affected by seeing all the other clones in the cells. He almost stops to talk to one, it looks like.
Yeah.
And the trooper's like, come on, keep moving, right? Mm-hmm. That's not, you know, cold, I'm doing my mission, a soldier's a good soldier, a mission's a mission. Mm-hmm. That's like, it really is like, Crosshair has been revolutionized, right? That he's like, oh, wait, no, the entire galaxy has got, the Empire has their boot on the neck of my kind. Of clones, right? And there's also this assumption that he's in this for selfish reasons. There's both Hemlock in Amiri Kerr there assume he wants to get away for himself, and there's nothing, you know, them saying there's no escape, the hounds will find you in minutes, there's nothing in his escape that suggests he's trying to get any farther than warning the correct Bad Batch, you know. And so we see an episode where Crosshair is motivated, seems to care about other clones, and is motivated entirely by protecting Omega. What did you think about all that?
Fascinating stuff here. Apologize as I go down another maybe real life, personal, I'll disguise it with Star Wars discussion point here. First of all, you're 100% right. That was, to me, escape could have been a nice bonus, an ice cream after the meal. I don't think there was any part of him that it was, I must warn. In hearing you talk about this, here's go with me here. There's something with the Crosshair thing that connects with me. he had his identity, a good soldier. Good soldier follows orders. That's what we do. We're doing our job. He's going on this journey. We've seen it. The journey, and we haven't spent a ton of time with Crosshair this year, I know. But we get to this point where he said he's revolutionized. He joined the revolution. It was this real simple, intimate kind of thing of, have you ever run into in life where you maybe have someone in your life, you know someone, maybe it was you, who you identify with certain things, maybe certain groups, maybe certain identities, but it doesn't seem to line up with your heart. And that sometimes takes a while. And sometimes it takes something tragic. Sometimes it takes something in your face. Sometimes it takes something that you experience personally to go, you know, what I thought I was does not line with my spirit. And that drives you forward to make that kind of change, the change that he's doing, saving his friends. And that's something that the connection was there. The connection was broken, but that doesn't, to me, doesn't mean that deep down Crosshair didn't kind of just think, I think I've done wrong and I think I still love him and I think I still have a connection, and all the stuff around me, all these trappings that I've surrounded myself with don't really reflect me. And now I have to decide to act on that because now I'm in that position. I'm revolutionized in the heart.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I really agree with you. I think that's well said, beautiful. And it's amazing to see how far he's come just this season, right? Mm-hmm. Of he has seemed like lonely, right? Of isolated. Nobody will sit with him. He has a bond with Cody, but then Cody sees the truth and Cody leaves. He really sees himself in Mayday and, you know, comes out of his shell. You know, explosive emotion from Crosshair is going, and Mayday got that out of him, right? So there is that sense that he needs connection. He wants connection. He's clinging to something that doesn't work, that doesn't want him. And in his clinging to that, he pushed away all these other possibilities of connection, right? And to see him finally wake up to that is powerful. And wake up that, I mean, great Star Wars theme, great real life thing. I believe that we're in this together, and what happens to one person in many ways happens to us all. And there's no amount of kind of going his own way that's going to stop the same fate finding him. And it gets highlighted, right? When Hemlock has that very, you know, dark side, everybody's out for themselves. Mm-hmm. I don't get the problem here, you know? Why are you being, I'm offering you your freedom. I know you're selfish. We all are. What's the problem? Yeah, right. And he says about Omega, she means nothing to you. And I really do think that Crosshair isn't like, he doesn't have, you know, a little picture of Omega on his wall. He's not like missing Omega, right? It's more that concept that everybody has value in who the hell is this piece of bleep, this piece of dank ferric to take away Omega's agency, to use her as a pawn, you know, to attack his brothers to get to her. Who the hell is he to do that? I think it is an image of Crosshair saying everybody has, all the clones have value. And he would do this. Maybe not for every other clone, but it isn't necessarily about Omega. It's about the truth that she has inherent value.
And the overall picture, and it's closer to home. And this is why, like, maybe I can't fully find the words to explain it, but like, you could have done the Crosshair thing differently all through this season. And the fact that maybe we're heading towards a Crosshair redemption of any kind, and I don't know what happens. Maybe he lives, maybe he dies, maybe I don't know. It's not a shock to me, right? Going back to even episode one of season one, like, Crosshair kind of... They'll come together. Not a surprise to me, but how you get there is important. And you could have done this episode again, him chasing them. You could have done a moment where he does the, you know, the blaster fire that saves them, right? And suddenly you have this, he throws the Emperor down the shaft, all that kind of stuff. But this episode came across as a smaller beat and an episode full of action and tension and all these big themes. It's very personal. What you're describing to me is very personal. That is he's experiencing. It maybe comes too close to home, but he sees it. And this season and this show being about the clones and clones' identity. I don't know. I'm struggling to explain it, but I was moved by this choice.
Yeah.
And the journey's done. And we have two more episodes, and who knows? But he warns them. He warns them. Crosshair's choice has been made.
Yeah, his choice has been made. Yeah, and I don't think there's any version of Crosshair is like, and then I'll capture them and get back on the good side of, like, no. You know, and maybe there is a picture. I'm excited to see where Crosshair goes. Maybe there is a picture where he's like, I can't change. I need to be a soldier. I realize the Empire is the enemy, and I can be a soldier for the Bad Batch. I can be a soldier for Omega. I can be a soldier for all clones everywhere.
Yes.
But I can't just go sit on Pabu. I'm not, I have to be a soldier. I can't change that much. You know, that could be an interesting story for Crosshair.
Absolutely. It's like trying to get me to a 9 a.m. meeting. It's not who I am, not where I'm going to be. I like your office. Yeah, no, and joking, but yeah, it's, I think you're right there about he, that's who he is. That's his part in the fight.
Yeah.
Maybe he'll show up and maybe he's the one around the corner on Endor.
That would be very interesting. I think Han and Crosshair could have a whole conversation just grunting at one another. That'd be great to see. So I also wanted to look at it sort of from the Imperial side. Obviously it's pretty straightforward. They treat them as property, clearly to be experimented on, like rats in a cage and ultimately eliminated. super scary conversation between Hemlock and Tarkin, where Hemlock says simply decommissioning problematic clones will not eliminate the threat. So it was definitely the counterpoint to the clones having inherent value, getting to choose who they want to be, all those things. But it continued to be this story of sort of unnatural control that I really fixated on in the Zillow baby episode. This continues to be the story of the Empire, of Palpatine, of the dark side. Hemlock is this totally creepy manifestation of it, of trying to control nature itself, trying to control other sentient beings. The whole story that the clones were invented as a pawn, and now they got all this identity and the face tattoos. But I really felt like that was brought out in this episode, you know, again, where Hemlock thinks he can control Crosshair, and like Hemlock's confusion to me is like palpable of like, well, I tried logic, I tried torture, I tried emotional manipulation. And I can't control you. And even at the end, he's still convinced he can, right? And he says, let's see how long until you break. In the final shot of the episode is a flash to Emery Kerr. And it almost felt like she was maybe like not having like a total like, I'm going to be a good guy now. But, you know, Crosshair spared her life. He stunned her. And the episode ending on her, it felt like me... that like in her mind she was going, I'm not sure he's gonna break. I'm not sure this is how this turns out. Like you can round them up, you can imprison them, you can torture them, but I'm not sure at the end of the day that you can control them the way you think you can.
Interesting. I like that. Yeah, no, I thought, yeah. Poignant ending. Yeah, no, there's just this simple reoccurring theme in the dark side, right? They never allow for any thoughts of empathy, any thoughts of compassion, right? Just time and time again. You want me to hate, but I won't. You want me to kill my father, but I won't. Yeah. And the dark side's always like, record scratch? What?
Yeah. Like, but selfishness, come on, right? Your freedom. Mm-hmm. And yeah. So I thought that was fascinating to Hemlock's, all these attempts and redemption is a complex topic in Star Wars. Crosshair did just brutally and cold blood shoot down somebody that Cody had just negotiated a truce with, you know? So it's not like all is forgiven, Crosshair, in my mind, but I did still find myself absolutely rooting for Crosshair and that kind of fun, like, you think you can break Crosshair? Oh, no, you can't.
Yeah. Yeah, no, and yeah, and again, it's often, like, I get tired of the Darth Vader, you know, at the end conversation, but he did all these things. Yeah, it's a myth. All right. We are complicated. Yes. If Anakin survived and went back to the New Republic, maybe there'd be some discussions. Yes, I totally get that. Same with the Kylo stuff, but it's what you take from it here. And I am absolutely rooting for Crosshair at this point.
Yeah. Yeah. For him to go forward, making better decisions. I also thought it was really, great to underline the themes of the clones' value and in the themes of the Empire always in the dark side, always being mystified when they can't control something. You know, Tarkin, master strategist, manipulator, talking to Hemlock, who has the same vibe, and saying, hey, I suspect the leak came from a rogue element of clones within our ranks, which we know it did because Echo has said we've got clone contacts still inside the Empire. But Tarkin goes on to say a growing number have been questioning their orders. And that's to me where the moment we're like this, like, yep, you think you can just Leia says to Tarkin, you know, the more you tighten your fist, the more star systems will slip through your fingers. And like the more you tighten your fist, the more clones are going to slip through your fingers. They're questioning their orders because of this obsession with control.
Yeah, which ties back to literally episode one, right? When the good soldier follow orders things was kind of put into play.
Yeah, absolutely. Any other big picture thoughts?
No, I think we hit all of them. Also, I'll admit, you know, maybe I forgot one because it's been a couple weeks for the episode. I had to go back to that. But no, we got all the big ones. And again, I love when Star Wars hits me or at least can, you know, put things out there that have a real personal touch to them. And I thought the core of this episode really did.
Yeah. For me, it's bittersweet and brutal because lots of bad things are happening. It's a bad time in the galaxy. But it is also just sort of fist pumping because it's these people making choices to fight for one another and kind of making choices to stand up for this just absolute truth that we all have inherent value. I think that's why I'm really resonating with, like, this is the culmination of the clone story. You know, they're not pawns. They're not tools. They're not property. They are unique beings in the Force and they matter, you know. It is powerful to me. My only other thing I'll say is this episode did have some like great action and some great darkness and some mood. Predators circling on a cold prison planet, Crosshair's awful torture contrasted with like Wrecker's I went fishing. It drove it home. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and then we will be back to discuss action, comedy, canon, all that great stuff back in a moment.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too. Like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
And we are back to continue our discussion of episode 14, season 2 of The Bad Batch, Tipping Point. Lots of things are tipping. Let's talk about action. There are some great action beats in this episode. What did you enjoy, Ken?
Look, obviously the opening rescue is where we're going to go to first. And, you know, as deep as we can get, as personal as we can get, I also want to remind folks, man, do I love pew, pew, pew. I love a good ship rescue. That leech vessel swinging off and attach it and tension behind it. I could highlight individual moments, but it's just the whole thing. A good old-fashioned rescue. Come on. That's fun. It pulled me in right from the start.
Yeah, I really agree. That was, we haven't seen as much, you know, space action this season. So it was great to have that classic Star Wars action. And I could almost hear the classic Star Wars theme of, you know, flying into action. Because here were, you know, the heroes, Rex and Echo, you know, rescuing prisoners detained on a mystery prison, being taken to a place to be experimented on for ambiguous, creepy reasons. No reason not to root for Rex and Echo, and seeing Gregor there with his bonkers voice.
Yeah.
It was great. And then, yeah, the leech maneuver, distracting them from with the main ship docking, that the leech was docking as well. That was also just really, you know, drove home the like, yeah, okay, you can drum us out and you can, you know, kind of twist the arms of, you know, 17-year-olds across the galaxy to have to become stormtroopers, but they don't got what we got, you know, the clone ingenuity and experience you could feel in this action scene.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, love that. Love that.
The only actual individual beat I wrote down is, I noticed the second time, there's one stormtrooper that they stun and he flies back and hits the door control and opens it for them.
Hey, good strategy.
Clones are all about strategy, right? Mm-hmm. I did enjoy the Crosshair's escape. The shooting the trooper kind of behind his back was a great moment. How did you feel about the actual action of Crosshair's escape?
Well, again, Crosshair's, he's so darn good. And we got to see it in display. The last episode he was in with Mayday. And, you know, again, there's this moment of like, all right, is he out, right? Does he show back up? Is he on Pabu? I found you. Hey, by the way, I got a message. No. So I like where they went with it. I like the, you know, you described when he goes kind of back into captivity there. So it was fun to root, even though it was a tragic ending. So nothing specific, but just, I like Crosshair in action. I think Crosshair, you know, he's done some bad things again. I'm not rooting for him or not forgiving him right away, but I think he's a cool cat.
Yeah. And it was affecting to see him. I think normally he would, you know, whistle and walk through that facility, taking people out. No problem. Right. Yeah. But to see how much he's hurting.
Yes. Yeah.
Is pretty powerful. Yeah. Last action, it's an action beat. It's a comedy beat. Hey, it cleans windows and you can eat it. It's great.
Where's the floor wax?
Exactly. Omega doing the tech turn, right?
Oh, yeah.
Just, I mean, it was you know, mostly comedy, but it's still that move is really cool and it was fun to see Omega master it.
Yeah.
Okay, we will head into comedy then, if you're ready to go there. Comedy, whimsy, weirdness. What do you got there?
Well, let's go right back to the tech turn thing. It was just so well played and such a, you know, the continued development of tech as a character. And I almost expect him to be like, when he's like, I kind of like that, you know, I am making a joke or something. Like, there's just like that he finally, you know, gets it. He's playing along a little bit more or something like that. But also, I love that this fully rounded and fully functional character is like, yeah, that's kind of cool. Name it after me.
Yeah. No, I really took that as like actual development, right? Of he tells her the maneuver in this very technical, precise way, which is his way. And Omega says the tech turn and is really excited about it. And you get the tech joke of that is not what it is called. Mm-hmm. And then it really does seem like a choice of, but I rather like it. And you almost get the sense like if he'd had more time, he would have, you know, looked up nicknames on the data pad. Like, I understand that it is sometimes official things can be referred to in an informal manner that celebrates the inventor, and I accept this, you know.
Absolutely. And again from Riot Racing on, like, it's a tech kind of going, I am not just this, I'm also a cool fighter pilot. I don't know, a little bit of that for me.
Yeah, I know, it was a great great comedy beat, but also, you know, in continuing development of everybody. And Omega's just infectious excitement. Oh, man.
She's always the best.
Yeah. So what are some other moments for you?
So record fishing. I think I accidentally highlighted this a bit early, but just enjoy the pure joy. Wrecker's my guy in so many ways. He's more joyful than I am. I'm a little more crosshair, actually, in terms of, but just watching him work and just finding, you know, we talked about it last week about the batch finding their purposes or finding different parts of their personalities and just being given what they maybe need, even if they didn't know they need that. I started to see Wrecker in that moment full of whimsy, a little comedy, but a lot of whimsy.
Yeah. And just that sense that everybody knows Wrecker, everybody likes Wrecker. Mm-hmm. And, you know, everybody has a right to decide how they want their skills to be used, right? I think I, in my life, have encountered tall people who are like, don't just ask me to get things off of all, you know, high shelves. I'm more than my height. And I've met other tall people who are like, I love getting things.
Yeah.
Wrecker's got that vibe of like, do you need a strong guy to do a strong guy thing? Great. And that he's got the huge fish. And they're like, hey, I think what is it like? We're trying to hold up the retaining walls. And he's like, awesome.
Yeah. Cool. Finally.
Yeah. So that whole vibe of like, that's a full day for Wrecker. Just doing strong guy things for people is awesome. I did like this crosshair moment. I don't know if it's quite counts for whimsy, but it made me laugh of Emery Carr. I keep saying Kerr and Carr. It's Carr. And she says, good morning, Crosshair. How are you feeling? And he says, what's it to you? So good.
Love that there. Yeah, I want to highlight, when Echo shows up, the pure joy in that Omega greeting Echo, just reminded me of who she is in this group. She's this big ray of sunshine, one that is you want to protect, but you also want to shine out into the galaxy. And I just thought that whole sequence, the anticipation and Echo's back. And I even like Echo going, it wasn't that long, but it felt like it. And she's such a wonderful character.
I agree with you. Just your ray of sunshine. I wrote down just what she's so delighted to contact him when they're out, you know, practicing in the Marauder and realize Echo's coming in and Havoc 5 to Havoc 4.
Yeah.
It's like, it's functional. She's part of the squad. That's the call sign. But she also sounds like a, you know, kid playing on a walkie talkie, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
Yeah. Last thing for me, it's a quick shot, but you know, we're focused on Omega running off of the Marauder to greet Echo and Tech has that little dazed stumble as he walks off the Marauder, which is great.
Yeah.
All right. Not as much comedy and whimsy, right? Because a lot of it was torture. And threats. Let's talk about the canon and the lore connections to other stories, unless you have anything else you want to share.
No, go for it.
That's okay.
Clone names to get to, yeah.
Yeah, we got some clone names to get to. We got some Tarkin. Tarkin featured in the very beginning of the Bad Batch show. Mm-hmm. I love that he's not the villain, but just pops up is kind of one of the next levels up from the Imperials that we meet. So here's my, it's great to see Tarkin, and we could just say, canon connection, Tarkin. But I'm curious, how much does he know? We still don't know exactly what's going on at Mount Tantus, right? Mm-hmm. Nala Se had the really ominous line of like, I won't help you because I know what Palpatine is trying to do and I'm not going to help him. And that could be as simple as, hey, he's doing a bunch of experiments on clones and on beasts, on anything he can find so he can make better armor, so he can conquer everything, so he can destroy other places like Kamino, so he can own everything. Could be as simple as that. Or Nala Se, with a much deeper understanding, can be like, he's trying to clone himself. Mm-hmm. I'm not helping with that. So to me, I think that is still a little open for interpretation.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think Tarkin knows about what is specifically going on at that facility? What Hemlock's goal is, because they want Nala Se to do something specific. And the whole end game of the show is they want Omega to be emotional manipulation to threaten her to get Nala Se to do X. And we don't know exactly what X is yet. Mm-hmm. Do you think Tarkin does?
This is a great question. Has he been to Exegol, is what you're asking me? Has he set up, you know, hey, we've just scouted out potential locations, Sheev. I think he, in an overall way, he does. But what I like about him showing up in the show and the way he's been brought in, like you just said, he's not the villain. He shows up. Just reminds me that he's got his hands in everything, but from an overview position. Am I putting it past Palpatine or anyone in the Empire to do something behind his back? No, but it just seems like, to me, I think he has a general understanding of what's going on. And what, I don't quite know. Is it tied to the bigger things? I know a lot of people want it to be. I wouldn't mind that either. But yeah, to answer your question, I think he has control, but maybe never as much as he has time for. He doesn't have time for a lot of it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm getting into the real weeds of the administrative duties and daily schedule of Tarkin. That's kind of where my mind's going.
Yeah, I think he's taking care of everything, and things are getting set up, right? We'll talk more about this advanced science division. He's overseeing the stormtrooper program. He is overseeing the early steps of the construction of the Death Star, right? Yeah, he is. He's kind of got his fingers in everything, right? As everything spreads out across the galaxy. I think I'm open to the idea that Nala Se understands that Palpatine wants to push cloning into something, into territories that are unnatural and untested.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't think Nala Se knows, I get it. He's going to die and he's going to do that force thing where he throws his body into it. Like, I don't think Nala Se knows that. I don't think Sheev called Tarkin in and is like, Wilhoff, here's the deal. I'm going to throw my body into a clone. I need like 8 of them. They need to be able to withstand. The body needs to be strong enough for my, essence to not corrode it. I don't think any of them know the plot of, Rise of Skywalker. Not saying it's that explicit. I think it's more just like it's those baby steps. Like he is trying to get Nala Se to do something unnatural, to recreate a living, a being that already exists. Kind of thing, which I guess is what the clones are of Jango Fett. They're modified clones.
Yeah, but I know what you mean. Like beyond the scope, beyond the purpose of what it's for or whatever. Yeah.
Beyond what the purpose of what it's for or with different specifications or that kind of thing.
We described Sheev in our Q&A episode upcoming that I don't want to spoil, but there's a good description of just Sheev ain't right a little bit.
Sheev ain't right. That's right. So I think it could be he's trying to get Nala Se to do something specific and unnatural. I think it could just be the big umbrella, making armor out of Zilla beasts, making new modified high end clones, whatever. It could just be the Imperial War Machine. It could be that much of an umbrella thing. I also think that there is a possibility that it is a specific, not Palpatine cloning himself, but something specific that maybe the Bad Batch can stop. So they kind of have a win.
Mm-hmm. I do like that actually a lot.
Obviously, we know cloning rolls on. It's still going. It ties into the sequel era. We've got Dr. Pershing in Mandalorian. It's not like, I don't think they're going to we blew up Tantus and we stopped everything. But maybe they put a dent in it and maybe they stop one specific thing that is them taking their agency back. If he wants to use the clones one more time, which is why they're there to be experimented on, and he stops, and they stop that, it could be a victory for them.
So I really like that, because you and I are just wondering, hey, could you possibly end the show after two seasons in this particular chapter? And I think there's some evidence to that too. But the omega of all is dangling, and I think you do want to give him win. You don't want to end. You wouldn't want to end a series on they go to the shore and stare out at that wave with Crosshair, and then just nothing else. Not that I need everything resolved, because the story in Star Wars goes on clearly. But I like what you're suggesting, that there is some sort of win. And I don't mean to put it in binary wins and losses, but just that there is something that happens that they're a part of, and then they can continue with their emotional journey.
Yeah. No, I really, yeah. Now I'm thinking too about how much it was set up in the beginning of everybody on Kamino Lamassu was convinced that they could offer a new, better clone. Mm-hmm. To the Empire, and that would keep them on board. So I like the idea that the Empire wiped out Kamino, took their technologies. Like, we still want that new better clone, which is maybe they just do want they want the super soldier Captain America. They want they want one totally obedient clone who is as strong as Wrecker, is connected to nature as Hunter, greatest shot as Crosshair, we want all the Bad Batch in one, and totally obedient to Palpatine. Maybe that's the thing, because that would really give identity to the clones to say, no, we happened naturally. We occurred.
Yeah. Interesting.
We're not going to be manufactured.
I like that.
Yeah. I like that. So moving on from Tarkin and lots of fun cloning speculation, we have the other clones that pop up. Hauser is from the first season of Bad Batch. He defied the Empire on Ryloth to help Cham Syndulla escape, and had a bond there, and agreed that it wasn't fair that the Empire is not following through on the agreement that they made when they were Republic to leave Ryloth. So that was one of our first signs of other clones really defying. Gregor also pops up. He was rescued by Rex in the Bad Batch from the planet Darrow after also deciding, hey, I don't want to do this. Nemec was another named clone who, from my research, appears to be brand new. Also Fireball. Fireball apparently did appear in an obscure Clone Wars book. So,
I think
Legends one. So, So, what were your thoughts on seeing all those clones and their kind of history?
Here's what I do every time I hear the clone names. Oh, I know that one. I don't remember where, but Gregor, I do. Nemec, that was a weird name choice, right? Post Andor, but this is Ogryt, and it's spelled different. I looked at that. I love it. It's a reminder of all the clones we've met along the way, and I love the connections, and I love seeing something go on, and love knowing where some of them end up, Gregor and Rex and everything. So it's always great.
Yeah, I really like having a mix of here's an obscure one, here's one we've never heard of. But then I was thrilled to see what's that?
There's just millions of them, so it's great when new ones pop up to learn.
Oh, yeah. And how many nicknames can we get? Yeah. And this is the clone Stinky. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
But seeing Gregor and Hauser again was one of those like, oh, awesome. That's great. Also, the more every little thread from the show comes together, the more I fear the end.
Yeah. And they're there, too.
Yeah, and they're there too. Let's talk about the planet that Hauser and his men were originally on as they were being taken to Tantus, Mount Tantus. They were on the planet Balmora, which has a history, not an extensive one, but it has history in canon and legends, if you look it up on Wikipedia, of being a foundry planet where ships and machinery is made. So that struck me is, you know, we didn't hear a lot about the conditions there, but we heard from Hauser that several of his men didn't make it. Are they already in full Narkeena 5 mode? Are those clones working to build the Imperial War Machine? What do you think?
I 100% think that. I mean, absolutely. At this point, it makes so much sense. And Narkeena 5 is running pretty smooth when we go there. So it's been around for a bit, I think. Yeah, I think this might have been something Palpatine was – it was part of his, his presentation. He had some key art made, you know, when he's presenting it to everyone when we switch over. This is how we also get it made. I absolutely think so.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that there wasn't necessarily room to focus on that, to focus on what is being done to the clones in this, you know, off list black site of Mount Tantus. But I liked a little bit of the insinuation that they're not just in a little facility. It's brutal. Speaking of brutal, the actor Ben Diskin was in the credits, which suddenly made me go, oh, right. AZ-3. I forgot that Sid still has AZ-3. So my question for you is it possible that there is a season 3 of Bad Batch, and it's the story of Omega trying to rescue AZ-3 from Sid.
You got go picture for me. I think we saw some dangling stuff with Sid. Is she going to get some comeuppance? Does she turn them in? Anything like that? Let's just like we did not want to leave no Gonky left behind, no AZ left behind.
Yeah. So you'd be down for a rescue of AZ-3.
Yep. At least a movie. Give me a movie.
Yeah. I wonder if Sid does have a change of heart and it's a heroic moment of, you know, Sid in battle armor in AC3.
yeah.
Bursting through the wall. All right. A couple other canon things here to discuss. We'll keep it moving. This advanced science division, a clandestine operation, no record of its location or purpose. According to my searches on Wikipedia, that is a new idea. but it is maybe connected to the Advanced Weapons Research Division under Krennic's direction. How do you feel about the existence of this, about its possible connection to other black ops within the Empire?
I love it. I know this is what would happen, and I want to see a scene of young Krennic applying for a job or something here. Yeah, absolutely. Palpatine's resources run pretty deep, and why not have a bunch of shadowy things? I know a lot of people enjoying Tantus and it being featured here from what aired the Empire and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, it's a lot of fun. But yeah, no, I think I absolutely think it's all connected in that sense.
Yeah, yeah, sense. Yeah, and Krennic's going to show up in the finale. Yeah. It's just, yeah, more of that picture of the early Empire. You know what happens throughout the entire Empire is apparently now a lot of chomping on electro death teeth.
Yes, yeah, I put that down too. Another one bites the dust. Oh,
yeah. Ooh, yeah. There was the assassin clone earlier. I believe this one was Captain Pierce. I forgot. I thought that you and I were just joking by calling him Lieutenant Bosch from Titus Willever from Mandalorian. But he doesn't have a name. So I guess we keep calling him. I don't remember what his rank was.
Yeah. That's funny. Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. But I like it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's fun. It's great. Mm-hmm. Speaking of horrible things, how did it affect you to see an ITO droid doing some actual interrogation? How did you feel about that needle that's just an earth syringe glued to a scary death ball? The thing that I feel would be ruthlessly mocked if it was new today, that people are okay with back in the day.
You're so right.
How'd you feel about that? Getting some horrific actual action.
I had a great reaction to it because, first, again, you are very right. If that showed up today, you telling me that Kathleen Kennedy approved a syringe on a ball, burn it all down, get in my car, I'm angry. You absolutely know that would be true. Absolutely know that would be true. But what I think wanted to me, and I can't recall if we've seen it before, all right? The ITO droid in actual action. And I'm talking about seeing, maybe not reading, anything. Seeing, I cannot recall. But this is up there with Yoda's origins that I almost don't want the full answer. So we got we saw it in action. You're right. Mm-hmm. But I've always wondered, how does that syringe even reach anybody? What's it doing? And what other tools does it have? And again, there might be some books. I know that, you know, the Alphabet Squadron has the ITO droid turned into a therapy droid, so to speak. I love seeing it. So I actually was laughing in a tense scene of like, oh, okay, we're seeing it. We're seeing it actually kind of do its duty.
Yeah, I really loved it seeing it because I love the weirdness of that droid. I love the consistency. I love the character in Alphabet Squadron that it was trying to resist its program. It was a therapy droid helping people, but then those couple of scenes where like the syringe is shaking because the droid still has the instinct to use it get the answers it wants. Great stuff in there. I haven't read Splinter the Mind's Eye in a million years, the original Legends book, but I remember from reading it that Leia does reflect on her torture a lot, and I can't remember how specific that gets, but I remember her reflecting on her torture and it being played up as like, yeah, no, a new hope zips by and we know that her resistance to the mind probe is impressive. We know not great things are happening, but even as far back as Splinter the Mind's Eye, it was being treated as something truly awful and horrific. It was kind of amazing to see like, yep, that's probably what the old mind probe did to Leia.
Yeah.
Last thing that I wanted to talk about is Hemlock's one black glove. There's so much about Hemlock that the performance that everybody has really highlighted from Jimmy Simpson, extremely effective, creepy, love to hate him, right? But he's so pulpy, Dr. Royce Hemlock. And even though the performance is fresh and great, it is of a heritage of the whispered evil villain. It feels like he's going to start, you know, taunting Clarice about the lambs, right? You know, there's a genre pulpy heritage to it. And I'm not criticizing performance. And the black glove like seals the deal. Spooky scientist expelled from the Republic Science Corps due to his unorthodox and unauthorized experiments. I just want to kind of highlight that canon of certainly seen black gloves before. What do you make out of that besides just aesthetics for the character? There is a shot of, you know, after Tarkin leaves the office, I believe, where he's like massaging it like it's still in pain or it's a memory of something. Where do you go with that?
A mod gone wrong, an experiment on himself gone wrong, trying to make himself stronger. Maybe it's not a, you know, maybe it's a metalhead. Maybe it's all that. That's where I look. That's combining that with, I was expelled from school from the experiments. That kind of thing works for me. It's definitely an aesthetic and it's fun, but the fact that you don't just want to put a glove on him, you want him to rub his hand. Like there's a lot of pain contained with it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't need an answer. And, you know, it's probably too on the nose to be like, yeah, his hand was shot by a clone. Yeah. You know, but maybe he has some history with clones, or maybe he is just like totally like, I'm in this business, but they're unnatural. You know, they're not. They're weird. They think they have sentience, but they're wrong. You know, I get the vibe that he might have those level of beliefs, but almost with the black glove, right? I mean, there's so much symbolism with Luke, and I don't think it's trying to call anything out or making any compare or contrast directly. But the way he's massaging it almost feels like, hey, maybe he actually did have some legitimate, you know, problem with his hand, and he grew himself one, and it's not quite right.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Three thumbs.
Gotta cover my thumbs with this black glove.
Yeah.
All right. That was it for me for canon. Anything else for you?
No. You hit all of it. Great job as always. I definitely wanted to get the cyanide capsule thing. It's so fun to see it pop up, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. Electrocyanide.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anything that you disliked or questioned in this episode?
No, not at all. I think there's a little bit of, like you said, let's move some pieces into place, and we got this great setup for the final episodes. We're going to experience that. And I think this episode did pull in a lot of not just the characters and places, but a lot of the lessons, and it's putting it to a very, very nice fine point that we're going to hopefully get more of. I want another season. I know you do too, but I think there's just a lot of things coming home here for at least this chapter of the story.
Yeah, no, I really, really agree. It really feels like so many things coming together. Like, can they trust Crosshair? What will they give to rescue Crosshair? Can they keep Omega safe? What is the legacy of Kamino? What are they actually building there? And is if all of that wasn't enough to be building to this big climax, will they stay on Pabu? And, let's just throw a summit in there, right? Like,
yeah.
It's like being in a horror movie and going like, well, we're going to throw a party. And like, oh, okay, all right.
Yeah, yeah. No, so all roads lead to the summit.
The summit, yeah. So excited to see how it all comes together. Is there anything that we haven't talked about that you wanted to touch on?
No. Let's get to the end game. Let's get to the finish line.
Yeah, exactly. Very curious to see if we've wasted precious minutes on this podcast talking about if there'll be a season 3 when there could be an announcement by the time we release this episode. But if there is a season 3, would you accept just a gentle sitcom on Pabu?
Absolutely. That's where I'd want to go. Let's go. Let's spend some time there. And Crosshair, he moves there and he's having a tough time adjusting, but he wants to stay. Absolutely.
Yep. There's a British sitcom called The Last of the Summer Wine that I haven't watched a ton of, but it's just about older people, you know, still trying to enjoy life in a peaceful village. And one of the characters is a World War II veteran who kind of can't leave it in the past. And one of the comedy beats is in the first episode is him walking into a library and going, "Do you have any books on silent killing?" And that seems like a Crosshair in a sitcom to me.
Yeah, and it all leads to the tech fee wedding at the end of the season. Just bought a very special Bad Batch. The wedding we've been waiting for. Yeah.
Oh, and just all the physical comedy with EZ3 and Omega trying to orchestrate the wedding of Tech and Fee. I'll take it.
Indeed.
If you could have a figure or merch of any character from this episode, who or what do you want?
Look, the fine folks at Gentle Giant have been putting out those great statues. A lot of they have a great wrecker one. They have a couple of them. So I want another wrecker one. And it's with the big fish on his shoulder and a big smile. It's just Wrecker Ghost Fishing, limited edition statue.
You know what? We're on the same page. I need a deluxe Wrecker, a vintage collection, a deluxe Wrecker that comes in a box with a big fish.
I'll tell you what, I do want a big Lego set. I do want the Pabu play set.
You know what? That's one of the only things we've talked about that could probably have good chance of actually being made.
Yeah. Exactly.
You finally named one that'll probably actually be made.
One of the big sets, you know, $400 price to go, you know, clear some shelf space.
Comes with Mr. Inta. Amazing. All right. Do you want to let people know where they can find us?
Absolutely. Thanks for listening to the Bad Batch Report this entire season. Two more episodes to go. You can find us on Twitter at Force Center Pod. We're on Instagram and Facebook as well, Force Center Podcast. Hive Social if you're still over there. I know a lot of you are. And then don't forget, we are also on YouTube. Subscribe over there. Hit that notification bell so you don't miss videos, shorts, live streams, all those kind of things going on over there. You can find the podcast in a lot of spots, including Acast, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts. Just search. You'll find us. Merch available at tpublic.com/user/ForceCenter. And you can support us directly at patreon.com/ForceCenter. Some refined tiers, some merch goals, and an overall goal that we're building for to put some new Jennifer Landa content out in the world based on some work she'd done before. So check that out there. You can follow me at Ken Knapsack. Go to my website, kennapsack.com, for more. You, sir.
Yeah, you can find me on all the social media, Instagram in particular, I'm trying to build up, but I'm also still on Twitter, on Mastodon, on TikTok is at Joseph Scrimshaw, and you can check out my short films and some comedy on my website. It's there too, but YouTube. Where do people find one another these days? Why don't we all just live on Pabu? Anyway, you can check out my YouTube channel by searching for Joseph Scrimshaw. One programming note for The Bad Batch. Next Wednesday, we'll have a big episode of The Mandalorian, and we'll have the big two-part finale of The Bad Batch. We don't have screeners for those last two episodes, and we really want to give Bad Batch its due. So, like always, we're going to be recording our Mandalorian episode and releasing it on Wednesday. And then on Thursday, we're going to record our Bad Batch episode, and it'll be out later afternoon Pacific time. We'd love to be able to get it out on Wednesday, but we really just want to be able to give Bad Batch its due, have time to take in the episodes and not feel like we're rushing it and trying to remember which beat was from Mandalorian, which beat was from Bad Batch, and all that kind of stuff. So that's our programming announcement. Any thoughts on that, Ken?
The only grumpiness is I just really wish Bad Batch had its day in the sun. We had moved originally supposed to be in September last year. They moved it up to this year. Not here to criticize the thoughts. I don't know the research, but here we are, and we're going to do our best to get the shine going on Bad Batch.
That is right. So we will be back for one more big Bad Batch report. But for now, for myself, for Ken, for Wrecker's Fish, this has been the Bad Batch Report.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at Ashley.com. Ashley. For the love of home.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.